Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
We're joined by professional investor Mike, aka Merlo. Welcome, Mike.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
So what are we going to talk about today, guys? What's on the radar?
The choice today is what was Zoetic or Zoetech, whichever one you want, and then what is now Chill, chillbrands.com. So, so Mike's basically invested in this and he's going to give us his lowdown on it. So it's not just me talking about it. How did you come in the first place to get into chill.com?
Well, I was introduced to it, as I often am, by a large shareholder who was already in. I generally, in UK small caps, I get involved either through placements, IPOs or secondaries, or in an early stage from a big investor's perspective, if they really love the idea and they recommend it and I have a look. And I like situations where I can get in and get to know management at least on a cursory basis. So those are my standards. But this was also interesting to me as they were transitioning, obviously, from an oil and gas company. I have a background in investing in oil and gas as well. I thought that was curious. And they genuinely seemed even then disruptive in a low-tech industry, which is so rare these days. Guys like us have to get involved in disruptive tech companies, and we often don't know what we're doing. But this was easier to figure out.
So the story really of 2021, even though we're going to talk more about 2022, was we had a stock that basically has gone from 5p to over a pound. And then decided to take the reverse journey, and drop back to 15p. So, I don't think we should spend a lot of time on that, but we should talk about why we think that has happened. You know, obviously it was overvalued at that point, but now obviously it seems fairly undervalued. So, I mean, give us a bit of your thoughts on that.
Well, it's a tough subject to deal with in a few minutes. I don't think it was particularly overvalued in some respects near the highs, but perhaps that's a debate for another day. I think the early adopters of this name got it right. And what we had was the arc of the share price performance is understandable. The quantum of the falls require a little bit of explanation. I think they delivered on paper anyway what they set out to do, which justified the move to 100 million. There are comps in the US, we often talk about them among ourselves, which are still valued at two or three times where we are. So I don't have a problem really in retrospect with the 70, 80p move based on what they'd achieved. Since then, obviously, they've under-delivered, in my mind, largely because of COVID. So it's kind of success delayed and not denied. And again, the quantum of the fall has been exaggerated. And basically, we also have a problem which doesn't get enough discussion. We have a problem with small microcaps in the value in the UK. The broader indices, if you look at the MSCI, but just very quickly, if you look at the MSCI microcap index, it shows a decent performance for the year to date, 19% or so. But if you look under the hood, the top 10 by market cap performers did most of that heavy lifting. And the rest on a performance basis, you see lots of chills, let's put it that way. And I think I listen to your podcast a lot, guys, and some of the names you discuss I own or I follow, and they've suffered significant falls, not unlike Chill. If you put Chill at about a move from about 10p to 70p and then down to the current 15. It's not, unfortunately, it's not unique. It's a bit bigger than a bunch of other names, but I can show you a dozen deep value names that have suffered a similar sort of sized fall. So that's part of the answer. The other part, of course, is in this country, the misses on timing that this company has had have been exaggerated for other trolling reasons and so on. So I do think they've delivered more than enough to justify a share price of a multiple of where we are now. And I will put my hand on my heart and push in whatever money I've got and bet you that if we were listed in the US, we would be at 50p or 60p. So I think some of it is down to the UK and the liquidity withdrawal we've suffered in the microcap space.
And when do you think, Mike, do you think that'll ever recover? Do you think, because I agree, I mean, like most of the stocks that we've talked about are just, I feel, are massively undervalued. It's almost like the city doesn't know how to value stocks, or it's very negative. It looks at them, you know, I don't know. It's like, what do you think, do you ever see it recovering?
It's a great question. And again, not showing off or anything, but I had drinks with one of the UK's remaining largest small cap institutional investors on Wednesday, long overdue. And he couldn't have agreed more. I mean, he mentioned half a dozen new names for me. So I've been working all of Saturday already looking at them. And we agreed on a number of points. One, the explosion in Q1, Q2 of this year caused a bit of an overreaction on the downside. So on the back of COVID, of course, and because the UK is overrepresented in COVID, you know, small cap biotech related names, COVID specifically, there was a real rush of liquidity. And then the withdrawal was a more dramatic impact. Two, you always have a Q3, Q4 problem if you have a great Q1, Q2, especially. And three, we did have a number of high profile disappointments and so on. The answer to your question is yes, I think it will. I think we're setting up for a very good Q1 of 2022, potentially, so long as the big caveat is so long as world markets don't crash, meaning the S&P doesn't crash. So if we can maintain, you know, the current neutral stance, if you like, on the multiple rate rises that are coming next year in the US, which the US stock market has had to reconcile itself to, I think there will be a return of liquidity. And in a desert, all you need are a few drops of water after all. So yeah, I'm reasonably bullish on this quarter that's coming. And sort of the second part is that the city doesn't know how to value them because the city isn't following them anymore, right? So on that issue, and that's all back to 2000 and whatever it is now, 10 and MiFID II and the new rules on breaking out research. So obviously, we all know it, but we forget it sometimes. So many small caps were dropped wholesale by the remaining broker dealers. But the irony being, the Peel Hunts of the world, the Numises of the world, are enjoying record profits. So that's another potential bonus. It may not be Q1 of next year, but I know that these guys, again, I have relationships with some of them. I know these guys are looking to get back in slowly but surely back into these names, covering them because they can see the value. The third, which was seconded by my friend running this large small cap fund, is that the value, the spread of value across sectors in UK small cap has not escaped the notice of US institutions. It is seen as one of the, if not the biggest pockets of value in the developed markets. That's how parlous it's been over here. That's how bad. And after all, the only institutions that count anymore are American institutions. And the final point, if you watch it, like I do, you would have noticed the Russell, which is a bad, but the only one available to us really guide for how smaller caps are doing in the US. The Russell was up 1% yesterday with a big fall in the Dow and an indecisive move in the NASDAQ. There's an indicator. Now, Russell is down 10% from its highs, whereas the other two main indices are kind of unchanged. So there seems to be a rotation going on there, too. I'm not extrapolating from a single day, but the evidence is starting to compile, and that does translate over here. So I think the first quarter of next year is setting up well, and a name like Chill will not need to produce sort of, you know, hard and fast numbers to get a double or a triple. All it needs is an increase in liquidity.
I mean, it's got a listing right already on the OTCQB, right? Yeah. I mean, is there much volume? Did you follow the volume over there?
I do. And, you know, there was a little bit of frisson, a little excitement after Viridian were hired.
I was going to say Viridian is a big, big one, isn't it?
Yes. Now, I often say that even professional investors have, you know, huge gaps in their knowledge. One of them is about how stocks settle, how short positions and margin are constructed, borrow and so on, all of the back office functions. And in that grouping, you'll find precious few people who truly understand the various types of non-listing listings that foreign companies have in the U.S. So what we have in the U.S. costs us a few bucks to have, but virtually every listed company in the U.K. has some kind of NASDAQ OTC listing. These are not well followed, notwithstanding the Reddit crowd. Sometimes they do find, you guys should go back and look at it, 88 Energy, if you haven't, for the hopes that it that kind of magic touches Chill's U.S. listing, because it can be quite exciting. But that kind of listing does not attract genuine U.S. investor interest. We need to be bigger, get re-elevated to the better OTC listing, or we need to do a small fundraise in ADR form in the U.S. And that would be a big help. That's the kind of, you know, something that's fungible into the local stock.
Because they're on the QX at the moment, but the QB is the one, isn't it, to get onto?
Yeah. So it'll come.
The drop in the share in the last year has also been down to have been shorted and basically thrown under the bus by different journalists within the UK. So what's your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that maybe sometimes the short activity is exaggerated. Obviously, it's yet another side of trading that we get very imperfect information on. You guys know in the UK, I think it's a 0.5% level at which somebody has to declare. So anything under that. I think there is some nefarious activity, and I think it was a popular short for a while. But for instance, trying to monitor the short position in Chill by looking at the IG posted activity is a fraught process at best. But yes, we have been attacked unfairly by a group which, you know, it wasn't in evidence as we were rallying from 40p to a pound. Suddenly, everybody could see it as we were falling from 70p to 50p, 40p, 30p. I don't know. I suspect that it's really more market makers adjusting their prices, getting out of the way of sellers. We've certainly had far less liquidity on the downside than we had on the upside. So it makes us more vulnerable to that sort of attack. If I could wave a wand and eliminate the market maker system for a name, even now, for a name like Chill, I would do so. But, you know, we are where we are. And
absolutely.
But it will, you know, these kind of things, as they reverse, will turbocharge the share price without the requisite fundamental news at some
point. And I think that's the case with many stocks as well.
That's my point.
On different markets as well. You know, I think Phil's a big component of life as well, and that's now ridiculously cheap as well.
So. Yeah, I mean, I just pulled up most of the CBD stocks on the London market, and I'd say all of them are down pretty much at least 50% from their highs that they hit. So it is a pretty much, you know, CBD, we talked about this in the past, it was it became the new kid on the block because of obviously the regulation, there was deregulations, and they allowed, obviously, Zoetic as it was back then, obviously kind of came in through a back door because they were Highland National Resources or whatever, and they then changed the name of it, and they kind of got through that as a back door. Life couldn't get onto the main market at the time because of regulations. And then obviously we saw the glut of Carnarvon, Cellular Goods, MGC, Oxford Cannabinoid, all these new companies that actually managed to get onto the main market, which was fantastic. CBX was a great, great example. You've got David Beckham back in it, big names, and they went up to, I think they even hit 30p. Look at the price now, 6p. So yeah, everything in that industry has been
hammered,
decimated.
I was in on the Cannabo IPO. It is a good little company. It really is. And you left out the fact that several of them, including Cannabo, have had some very good news along the way. So, putting that aside, what you just articulated is precisely my point. Okay, we're down 75%, they're down 50%, but there you go, right? So I'm left in my mind having to explain 25% fall, not a 75% fall. To get back to your original question, Kevin, the withdrawal of liquidity, the withdrawal of activity, the exaggeration of being listed here instead of in the US. Remember, there's a parallel, which markets do trade like this. I mean, psychologically, there's a parallel in the US, US, Canada. I'm using them interchangeably. When the marijuana stocks first listed, they had very similar moves to us and a crash of all crashes, right? Those were the growers. Those were the first ones to come to market. So there's a history of that happening in this industry or this sector broadly defined. But mostly, when you step back and you reflect on the fact they're all down. You know, the market, if you can put it down at least partly to the market itself and the market's, short-term memory loss or what have you, you start to separate yourself from some of the more crazy fundamental justifications that you often hear, not just among the trolls, you even hear it among the fans. You know, this demand for numbers yesterday. Gotta have numbers. Gotta know scores. Nothing.
That was me.
Yeah, I know that. I know. We got to be friends through that. Frenemies. But this is and I'm completely a victim of it. But this is as old as investing. It's completely debatable. But this is what I call reverse engineering the share price. You see what happened and. Look, when we abandoned sort of basic finance theory when it came to valuing equities, when we got off this whole idea of efficient frontiers and stocks are a perfect distillation of future earnings, potential and dividends and so on, i.e. they are very imperfect vessels, which Warren Buffett was trying to tell us for 50 years, then you've got to treat the share price with a great deal of care. I often say the share price speaks, but sometimes you a different language than you're used to. So I don't accept. And now it's the debate is over because it's at 15p, and the debate at 40p, you'd be right, Kevin, and I was wrong. But at 15p, the look through good news, i.e. the news that the company has already announced. 4, 5, 6 different things that the share price has utterly ignored. Any one of them can send the share price up 2 or 3 times. Of the main ones, maybe the top three, when the market realizes it's got it wrong.
Okay, I'll interrupt you there then. So now we've done our backward looking thing, and it was very good because it's very useful for I think all CBD stocks or all stocks in this arena. It's not just about chill, because I think they've all been affected adversely in a certain way, maybe different ways for different stocks, but ultimately the market has changed things. So 2022,
yes.
Why is Chill Brand going to be whatever it happens to be, whether you say it's 40p, 60p, a pound, back to all-time highs by the end of the year? You know, if you speak to our friend hopeful, Dave, it's going to be several pounds or maybe a pound at least by next Christmas. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I feel we're going on some sort of trajectory that's not going to be down from here.
I love that language. Yeah.
And I hope I'm right, you know.
I think you're.
But why? What are the reasons behind that?
You know, you can imagine I was nervous about coming on today and doing exactly, I guess, what I've done, which is go on and on and on. And I tried to distill my thoughts, you know, under the assumption you'd ask me that or we'd talk about that. And I just gave up because it's impossible to distill it. But I'll try to give a summary, a quick summary. One, and we've covered it well, I think seeing the back of this year is going to be, I mean, the calendar is going to be our friend. There's no question in my mind from an investment perspective, it's been our enemy or it's been neutral, but it's going to be our friend. New page, new money coming into various places, can't get any worse in terms of supply demand for the shares. Okay, so that's one thing. The events that are coming I think will trigger it. It's stem from one or more of the things they've already announced that the market has either undervalued, not valued at all, or even negatively valued. So keeping an eye on next year, the one that rises to the top of the things they've already announced is the Viridian hire. They got these guys. I can't emphasize this enough. I have friends that went to business school with Scott Geiger. This guy is a gorilla. He is a beast. And Viridian are everything that he admitted to in his testimonial video and more when it comes to CBD. They would not, let me say this as emphatically as I possibly can. They chose us. We did not choose them. Of course, we gave them 11 million shares. I would have preferred if those options had been struck with some kind of strike price above zero. I've made that clear to management. But we gave them 11 million shares. We hired them for 11 million shares. I'm not quite clear on whether we have to pay them any fees going forward if we do any type of deals. But we've got their advice for 11 million shares. They own 5% of this company. Okay, but ultimately, they chose us. They do not need Chill. And Scott Geiger does not need to be assigned to Chill specifically from Viridian's board. I urge everyone on the who's listening to this to go on Viridian's website and look at the list of their clients. Look who they work with and look who is now working with us. Okay. Viridian will produce, you know, the share price, you know, faltered because, oh my God, they're a, you know, part of what they do is raise money for companies. Well, another alert to people who are listening, raising money for us does not necessarily mean raising equity. One. Two, not all equity raises are dilutive. It's a word that is misused by a lot of small shareholders. If we go from 2,500 stores, if we get another distributor in the US, say, or anywhere else in the world who wants to put us into 5,000 stores and we need to raise some money, that is not dilutive. They could issue shares at a penny. It wouldn't be dilutive because it's going to produce a return well in excess of the cost of capital, even if that cost of capital is done at 1p. Okay, that's the second thing. Third thing is it ain't necessarily going to be equity. There are different financing options available through a company like Viridian. Go on their website, read how they are doing more and more debt deals for companies in this space, debt-related deals. We are in 2,500 stores. We will be in 10,000 stores by a certain date, come hell or high water. We don't need to produce any sales more than we've already done. The shops all want us. You want evidence of sales? Go look at the announcement on Betterment. Go look at the fact we won second prize in a 500 product competition by one of the country's largest convenience stores. Our products are selling. Stop obsessing about whether it's revenue this month or next month or whatever. All that matters is we're going to roll out more and more stores. That kind of distribution capability is monetizable. And that's the sort of thing Viridian does. We didn't hire them to do an equity raise for us. open up your minds, people, and start to understand these guys are for real. They are a major investment banking type house with creative solutions, okay? The fourth thing from Viridian is they have staff already who can fill positions at Chill. I think we might tap them eventually, but they are going to find us a world-class FD. They're going to find us a recognizable name at Chairman. The sort of people they find and we hire are not going to want to be associated with a company that isn't selling, that's engaged in any kind of deceptive practices. Exactly the opposite. They want to be associated with a company which is going to be at the forefront of independent companies and what's now known as RRP company, RRP products, reduced risk products. That's the new acronym that everybody needs to take on board. Jefferies, the mid-sized US investment bank, just put out a big piece on tobacco and tobacco cessation. And it's all about RRP. It's all about our products. It's all about our pouches. Forget about anything combustible. I mean, our cigarettes or our hemp cigarettes, they have a future. They're going to be great. But the success is going to be when people start to realize that our pouch, not only do we have now award-winning flavored CBD pouch products and the coming synthetic nicotine versions, but we're building out a suite of products in the very area that is the highest growth. That's the $35 to $50 billion market that everybody is hearing about, which is still just a fraction of the potential tobacco cessation market, which is $800 to $1 trillion. If you believe Philip Morris, no one is smoking in 10 years anymore. So the opportunity is vast. The triggers are going to start from Viridian, I think. New management, new signups, and just the rollout that we've already announced. And that's all within 1 or 2 months of the new year. How was that?
That was very good. So that was one point or one thing that you said, yep, which brought in a few others. But yep, for me, one of the strongest things going forward is going to be nothing to do with the CBD as such. It's going to be the synthetic tobacco.
Right.
Okay. Because this truly is a replacement of tobacco.
You mean synthetic nicotine?
Sorry, synthetic nicotine. So effectively, we're putting synthetic nicotine in a herbal cigarette or a herbal smoke.
Or a pouch.
Or a pouch. So this is going to allow smokers to effectively stop smoking and still take the nicotine without using a vape or without...
Absolutely. And the trolls are, ironically, the people who want to argue against that are trying to make claims about nicotine product, non-tobacco nicotine products, or even our now synthetic nicotine products, that the FDA somehow is going to come down, you know, on these products. It's going to come down as it always has against guys who jump the gun and are selling things with false claims, et cetera, et cetera. Chill is taking it absolutely step at a time. That's the first thing. The second thing, which is in this Jefferies report, which was quite interesting, is that nicotine itself, all right? So if you are gaming out, where is the regulation going to come? Where is it not? Some people are throwing up their hands because on the one hand, you've got, you know, a dozen states talking about legalizing, even the federal government legalizing. I'm only talking about the US. The UK can F itself at this point, given the nonsense at the FSA. But in the US, there are a dozen states that are talking about legalizing marijuana. On the one hand, full stop, right? Which is, by the way, a complete goldmine for anyone like Chill. And then on the other hand, you've got trolls in our space who are saying, oh, watch out for synthetic nicotine or non-tobacco nicotine products. Oh, the reality is the studies are clear. Nicotine is no more harmful, independent of a combustible product, okay? Independent of combustible tobacco product, no more damaging, no more dangerous than caffeine. So this whole area of RRPs, of reduced risk products, the smart money is on the federal government, the U.S. government, the whether it's the FDA or other parts of the government, getting behind a rational RRP model that endorses RRP. You know, that we have one guy on the Telegram group. No, sorry, no, it's not on Telegram, on the LSE board, who's obsessed with TAT. And you know, TAT is this Canadian company, which I often use to advocate for the valuation of CHIL, because TAT, despite the fact that I've gotten it right and it's down quite a bit in the last 6 months, is still valued at 270 million Canadian. So call it 200 million sterling, which obviously puts it at seven times our market cap. TAT have one single product, which is a phony tobacco CBD cigarette. It's a combustible product. It's rolling out in crappy convenience stores now, even in the UK. And he keeps posting every announcement from that company as if it were issued from God himself. When the reality is, TAT is backed by some very impatient private equity in North America. If that same money had I swear to you, if that same money had backed, and no disrespect to John, but had backed CHIL instead of John's story at the beginning, we would be a lot more than 200 million market cap, okay? Because it would be a much more forgiving atmosphere, and we wouldn't have TAT's onerous balance sheet weighing us down. That company is never going to make money, ever, okay? Not in our lifetime, not for the next 10 years, okay? They can have all the rollouts they want, and they are in the most dangerous part of the CBD market. I know we have a competing product, but we are, if you look carefully, you will see we are not coming out with new cigarette or combustible products. We're coming out with pouches with flavored CBD, pouches with synthetic nicotine, massive growth potential that are all, surprise, surprise, within this RRP space. The FDA is far less likely to give its endorsement, if you like, even a backhand endorsement, to a combustible product. So what is our company doing for all the criticism that it gets? It is doing precisely what you would want it to do if you really understand how this market is developing. It is going where the potential is. It is going where they can leverage their skills, which are substantial in terms of product development. And it's going where the disruption truly is, okay?
Okay, so let me stop you.
Sure.
Let's talk about specifics. By the end of next year, how many stores do you expect CHIL to be in?
I'm less good at this, but I would say certainly they have made it clear that their initial rollout through ATAC and to a lesser extent Smoker Friendly will be on track. So I would expect between 7,500. Well, I don't want to, but at least 7,500 stores, I would say.
Okay. And how many lines of products do you think they will have at that stage?
I think they'll be selling I think they'll have at least three different distinct pouch products. They will be selling their hemp cigarettes. And I don't think I believe they will have a vape product on sale by the end of next year as well.
Okay. The gummies as well.
Sorry?
We've also got the gummies, which have now been out there.
The gummies I always forget about, but the gummies are going to be saved. I didn't mention, but I was originally attracted to this company because I thought the two businesses were splittable, and that's my background is companies that are cheap because they are conglomerates or they're mixed businesses that the market doesn't appreciate fully both of them. I think and this is strictly from me, but I think we've already split between Zoetic and CHIL. I think the Zoetic side will be sold. I think it'll be to Yuma, a company like Yuma, which is listed over here. I was very surprised about Vitality. But they paid 11 million quid in a sort of complicated transaction to buy Vitality. If they pay 11 million quid for them, I think it can easily pay you know, 15, 20 million for Zoetic when we get up and running. So, and then the only reason I mention all that is because obviously the gummies are going to come over to the chill side or on the chill side. And I am not following the gummy sales as much, but they are obviously starting to take off again. They're award-winning. It's an award-winning product. And, you know, I think if we get on the shelves, for instance, that in the UK, I think I know, you know, where our who our distributor will be if we do get, when we get FSA approval. And some very clever guy on the Telegram board noticed that they put out an announcement. So we'll get it. We'll get decisions sooner rather than later, which, by the way, some legacy brands on the shelves are at risk. I don't know what kind of submission Love Hemp has put in, but I hope it's solid.
They've done I think it's like an 800 page one, and it's, you know, it's there's only one or two companies that have actually been given the novel food, and I think Pure is one of them, because they're effectively a synthetic CBD oil, and it's a lot easier to do that sort of submission. So yeah, I'm not too concerned about that, but I've also heard the same, that there will be some companies who will not meet that regulation because of the amounts of THC that could potentially be in there, and the quality of the submissions has been awful, so that they will be removed from the shelves. I mean, the question I've got has always been, like, someone like Charlotte's Web in the US, one of the biggest of the CBD companies, spend tens and tens of millions on just the marketing alone. And for me, I've always wondered that, it's always been a convenience store having a chill product in like a little plastic case at the side of the till, you know, in the US. How are they actually putting this marketing in place and spending these millions on it to get the word out about the chill product?
From what I can tell, the marketing thus far has been word of mouth. We've gotten to where we are, and that has helped. I've made a big deal about this in a number of different platforms. The model they put in place, which they take a lot of criticism for, referred to as a two-person company because of that, because they've outsourced production. Marketing is non-existent, but because they've outsourced production distribution, they have run into more problems in some cases than they might otherwise have. But they also didn't spend 7 million quid last half year the way TAT did on almost non-existent, I mean, on marketing, which has been pretty haphazard. So their marketing, let's work backwards, right? They have a 10,000 store commitment from ATAC with no marketing at all. Just the trial. I know this is repeating a lot of the mantra about chill, and people don't want to listen anymore at 15p the way they were listening at 1 quid. But they've achieved all this without, you know, with just that original store roll, that small store rollout testing with Ox distribution. Now, I've done a little bit of digging. I think that Rhino, though they have also come cheap, or no, I'm not cheap. They've also joined, and they didn't have to join. I mean, absolute A+ marketing firm with already everybody knows the brands that they've brought to the world already. I think they're going to submit a marketing plan that's going to cost us some dough. But I think by that time, we will be making a lot of dough, and there will be different ways, as I've already battered on about it, to finance that. So
yeah,
I think they've done it the right way round. You know, Love Hemp has spent a lot of money on marketing, and we haven't. You know, these are big overheads that some of our competitors have had to suffer. Listen, they got it right. They got it wrong. They got it right. You know, they've kept the cost base miserly. Another thing I've talked about is finance, money. I've argued on the boards, you know, when they announced they had 2.5 million quid left of their 6 million raise, X went to buying the chill.com website, which is another reason I'm super bullish, as are many people, and paying that 1.5 million to close the finance facility. You know, people are talking about a fundraise, like they're going to issue equity at 10p. Insane. How much do you think I turn the question back to you guys. What do you think these guys are burning a month?
I don't know, probably not more than 150,000 a month.
That's right. I think it's still below 200 grand. We have two CEOs who earn 100 grand a year. So, you know, let's step back and forget about the share price for a second and credit them with, you know, for all the accountants in the audience for doing a bloody magnificent job putting us in a position where if we wanted to do a raise at 15p, look what we could just how we could justify it. Anybody would, you know, anyone in the US private equity would put it money in at a premium right now. I guarantee it, given the potential and the absolute pristine balance sheet right now. We are so leveraged for growth, it's crazy. So I don't think that they've spent hardly anything on marketing to date. They've gotten an enormous distribution reach without it. And when they do it, they will do it with money that they raise not from equity, either organically or through credit means, and it'll have much bigger impact because we'll
they've
be
been they've been very specific with influencers as well, like in specific sports. Like you talk about the bull riding, I think it was in the US. I mean, it sounds crazy, but there's a huge big community in there of pouch chewers, especially tobacco pouch chewers, that they decided to go for surfers as well. I think they've aimed for, you know, it's like that chill, cool influencer that they've really gone. And those influencers are probably getting paid on sales rather than on any cash amount, you would imagine.
They wouldn't tell me. But first of all, I've smiled at the discussion about rodeo on the Telegram group only because for an East Coast nerdy Jewish boy from New York, I'm still American by birth, and I know full well two things about rodeo. One, it's second only to NASCAR in certain parts of the country as a spectator sport, enormously popular. I'm exaggerating, of course, I have no idea if it's number two, but it's very popular in parts of the country I never travel to. And two, they get paid piss, as my grandmother used to say. So it's not costing us much to put our patches, to get our patches on these rodeo guys. Fascinating sidebar on that came up in my conversation with the boys, as it were, is that there was a lot of wonder speculation again on the board as to whether we knew that this fellow was going to, you know, make a big run, and I forget his name, but the chap we backed, you know, whether he'd make a big run in the championships. The answer to that apparently is yes and no. Obviously, the CEOs had no idea, but we're using a consultant. Again, had no idea. And the consultant is, I forget his name, but he started American Spirit and sold American Spirit to one of the big ones, Philip Morris, Bats, or whatever. So we've got consulting service on that from a guy who paid to the idea that you couldn't have an independent brand in cigarettes, right? One of the biggest success story, independent success story in a product which was already under assault by governments all over the world. He managed to start a brand with nothing and sell it for, I don't know, $50, $60 million. And he's consulting to us. He's the guy who found this rodeo star. They wouldn't tell me how much we paid to have our, you know, to endorse him or whatever, or have him endorse our products. But the comment was, you'd be embarrassed if we told you.
Yeah, they maybe just paid for his kit. That was basically Okay, so I know you could talk forever for America. So we're gonna put a stop to it now, and I'm gonna ask you one question.
Yeah.
12 months from now, what do you predict the share price is gonna be?
I think it's gonna be up 10 times, £1.50.
Okay, good answer. From my perspective anyway, Phil's probably not going to comment on Chill, but from my perspective, the chill.com website or the name, the fact that they can move into many different areas, products. The marijuana might even come into play into the future as well. But this is going to be, for me, a company that's going to focus on people's lifestyle to make money from that. And yeah, we've had a very disappointing 2020, but I think the only way is up. I really do, you know. Yeah. And Zoetech will come again.
Amen.
Amen.
All right.
And thanks for your time.
Peace, guys. Thanks.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.